contracts have been signed in the last month, and those projects under round one and round two are going forward. My belief is these bills are a continuation of that project. Talks about technology transfer, and you know, when I got involved in this process, I wasn't really quite sure what technology transfer meant, but it is really just the research and development, creation of ideas into products, and the allowance of those ideas and products to be brought forth for the benefit of not only the people of the state of Oregon, but also for the institutions. And it's a truly wondrous prospect. I think that's where the state of Oregon needs to go. There's been a lot of work done on that. This isn't the end of it. This is a step in those directions. And I think if you look at this as a continuation of starting in the last session, working in this session, and a continuation going into the next session, these are all one-step processes that we have to continue to look at the future and see where we're going to take the state of Oregon. You know, we're in a new information age economy, and if we don't accept that fact, I think that the state is going to be the loser. I think the people will be the losers. We're financing our public services, our education, and our healthcare services and public safety through the income tax dollars, so we're really only as good as our economy. And if we don't recognize the need for this technology and the technology transfer concept, I think we're going to be remiss. There's a lot more people in the back of the room that are much more smarter than I about this and understand these concepts. And so if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them from the committee. And I appreciate the opportunity and your consideration in getting me on early here.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions for the Senator or comments? No, thank you very much. Senator Nelson, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bills 101 and 102 and open up the possible reconsideration and work session on House Bill 5051. And let's see, I think I would like to, as you remember, members, we passed the community college budget out yesterday, the full $45 million to the growth and enrollment part. And I need to bring the bill back just to make sure everyone understands how the funding for the six skill centers and the Sabin Skill Center fit into the $45 million. I do not expect to go to a work session, but I would like to bring the bill back, and without objection, I'd like to have the bill in front of us. Is there any objection? So ordered then. And I'd like to start with Representative, you have to go to another meeting shortly. Could you give us your thoughts on this, please?
Well, I just, if we get Cam to come up.
Sure, that'd be fine.
I just want to make sure, I guess, since there were questions that were raised, I just want to make sure that, to my extent, that the community colleges understood what we did, what I thought we did last time, and all the committee agree that we know what we did. It was my understanding that in the final determination on the $45 million, that we had a very good conversation and exchange, and that $45 million was to be used as the community colleges wanted to use it. They presented documentation that there are certain things they had in mind that they wanted to use it for. We said that's great, would like to do that. We also talked about flexibility, the extent that the college presidents wanted to depart from that. That was fine. And if they wanted to or felt a need to do some of the regional programs or some of the skill centers that were not included in our priority list for the $45 million, that would be fine. But we would not be requiring them to do the regional programs or do the skill centers. They have another set of priorities that we acknowledged and accepted, and also acknowledgement that $45 million is it for the biennium, and there was a little discussion about not being perhaps encouraged or welcome to come back to the e-board. And that was my understanding, and I guess the extent that community colleges had different understanding, I guess I wanted to see where that was.
Sure. Yes, that's very true.
As I recall, our motion was that first option that Steve presented us, which clearly said that the $45 million went basically to take care of the enrollment problems.
Right.
And then and we all agreed to that, and we voted for that, I think, unanimously. So it seems to me like that was the decision. I think then, as later as we talked about it, Representative Schrader is correct that we did suggest that they did have some flexibility in terms of the way they used it.
Right.
If they so chose, but it was up to them. I think that's
right. You're absolutely right, but I want to make it perfectly clear, or at least in the minds of all the committee, that what this committee's intentions are as far as the $45 million, how it's used by the community colleges, and what the status of the skill centers. There was some misunderstanding about how this affected the Sabin Center and the Skill Center. So I think you understand the questions, Cam. Can you just speak to that, please?
For the record, Cam Croy-Sprawley, Community Colleges and Workforce Development. Mr. Chair, member of the committee, I have been able to, after having conversation with LFO staff this morning, talk to all of the presidents that have skill centers on their campuses, and you have letters where they are here in person to speak to you about their commitment to the $45 million. Case in point would be the letter from Jerry Berger, the president at Chemeketa, that they have followed a process in the past year to incorporate the services of the skill center in their general operating budget. They intend to continue the service, and the letter really lays out how they went about including the community and their local board in that process, and that they stand committed behind the $45 million for enrollment growth and would waive, if I can say that, that any skill center dedication come out of that $45 million. Certainly, there is several references in these letters to it. Now, if you'd like to give us a little more, we would dedicate it to skill centers. But given that it is $45 million, the skill centers will be part and parcel of the service delivery out of community college.
Cam, does this have tell me again how the Sabin Skill Center relates to the 17 community colleges and their skill centers?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Sabin Skill Center is a distinct line item. The resources are dedicated by the legislature and moved directly to North Clackamas School District for the funding of the Sabin School Center. Skill Center. There are partnerships with the local community colleges, Clackamas particularly, but as far as resources or other things changing hands, that doesn't happen. We don't dedicate any of the community college support fund to the Owen Sabin Skill Center. It's a distinct categorical funding.
And the community colleges do not pay anything to the Sabin Center for services or anything. There's no financial participation between a community college and the Sabin Skill Center.
Mr. Chair, I'm not fully aware of all the particulars. There are people here from Clackamas Community College.
Could we have that person that could speak to that come before? Because that's really the main question.
He was here.
Okay,
right.
Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Might I ask him a quick question?
Certainly.
What level students does the Sabin Skill Center serve?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, Owen Sabin Skill Center serves high school students. When we had our full budget presentation, the representatives from the Skill Center were here, and the testimony was that it was primarily 11th and 12th, although there were some younger students, and they were primarily from the Clackamas School District, although there was a small percentage that came from outside the school district as well.
Sure. That's eight then.
Yes, thank you.
Senator Troll.
Is there any way then that the community college itself is involved in the program other than that it's been funded in a line item in the budget? Is the Clackamas Community College involved in that program?
I think we have a person maybe that wants to speak to that.
Yes, David Dixon, Associate Dean at Clackamas Community College, and I was actually involved in the early years when the Advanced Technology Centers became a specific appropriation. And at that time, I think, even though Saban is a separate program and is run through North Clackamas School District, and they receive ADM and they're on a separate track, that was the best place that program. They were doing some exciting things, and the legislature felt that there was an opportunity to put them in with the Advanced Technology Centers for funding. And so it's been a little bit of an odd duck to be in there with the community colleges, but that's the way it's been for the last 8 to 10 years.
Okay, other questions? Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When that was initially done, perhaps you know, was that not set up as a pilot program?
I believe it was, and I think it was somewhat unique among the K-12 districts around the state. And I know they're doing some, you know, they're doing some distance learning and a lot of very unique and creative things with vocational technology and vocational programs. And they've been a strong partner with Clackamas Community College and all of our training programs between the Saban Skill Center. And they work with the other districts in Clackamas County to provide training for other students in the other school districts.
Representative Hopkins.
Yes, Representative Winters. I believe that the Saban Skill Center started during the old CETA years, which was a long, long time ago, as a pilot. That's been from half a year ago.
Question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Smith.
The Saban School Centers receive any other funding besides this request? Do they charge tuition, or are there other local dollars that go into that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, they use the, and we'll remind the committee that there is $1 million in our current budget for the Owen Saban Skill Center. It is the only skill center that the governor did leave some resources in. The community college skill centers have been zero funded, but he did leave $1 million for Owen Saban. They do receive ADMW, and that's my knowledge. But the $1 million that's in this budget helps buy down tuition for students, so that it doesn't cost them any more to come to what I think of Owen Saban as a magnet school with those professional technical programs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Steve, would you report to us about the governor's budget? And I'm assuming that's part of the budget we passed yesterday, is it not? How are we treating the Saban Skill Center in 5051?
In 5051, you approved the governor's recommendation for funding for the Saban Skill Center, which leaves $1,030,000 in funding for that center. It is a 62.5% cut from that current service level funding for the Saban Skill Center. Essentially, this is calculated as a cut in 50% of the state support for the first year of the biennium, and phasing out to a 75% cut in state support the second year of the biennium. It's almost unfortunate in terms of the budget that the Saban Skill Center and the Community College Skill Centers use the same term, because the Community College Skill Centers, and there are six of these, are programs of specific community colleges that where the state has been providing extra funding in support of these programs above the regular per student distribution to the Community College Support Fund. What the governor's budget did, and what you approved, was a 100% reduction in the additional funding for community college, the six community college skill centers, as opposed to the Saban Skill Center, which is not a part of a community college, even though it's in this budget.
Does the Saban Center get additional funding from the school district and gets the state school support funding for those students?
Do you know?
Yes. The Sabin Center does receive most of its support from the North Clackamas School District. I do apologize that I wasn't able to get the exact figures in time for this, your work session today, but I believe that the state support level covered roughly a third to a little more than a third of the Sabin Center's budget. And if there's someone here who knows more, please.
Yes, report. Joe Crum, by yourself,
North Clackamas School District.
Okay. Joe Crum. Yes, Joe.
Good afternoon.
So tell us what
that
Sabin gets from, and please repeat it, from the North Clackamas.
About one-third of our funding has come from the state for the last several years. And I, just to echo what David has been saying, that it started several years ago, and we aligned because of our work together, but also for political reasons, at a time when there was no money for any of the skill centers or for ours or theirs, and we worked together several sessions ago to start this funding, and since then it's always been in the governor's budget at full funding, at full support.
And so you don't, or how much do you get through your regular K through 12, but what's the dollar amount? How many FTEs do you have in the program? Say, approximately how many students take?
There's 2,200 students that attend Sabin, plus another 100 across the state and 100 from throughout Clackamas County that come in from other school districts.
And I think the question was asked, those 100 from other school districts or from around the state, do they pay a tuition?
No.
They don't pay any tuition. Right. And so the students that, the 2,200 from North Clackamas, you receive from your school, the full funding, the ADMW?
Right, right.
Okay.
Right. In North Clackamas, Sabin as if is a fourth high school, so to speak.
Okay.
And those students come from the other high schools to take advanced programming, advanced professional technical classes.
Question.
Yes. Representative Smith.
How long has the state been funding Sabin?
I believe 5 sessions.
About 10 years, I
yeah.
think.
Yeah.
So
Sabin,
since its beginning?
No. Sabin has been open since 1968. But what the state funding has allowed Sabin to do is double in size and have the statewide programs or have the distance learning programs. It's the only high school distance learning program in the state.
Do they get property tax revenues? I mean, I don't realize that's taken out ADMW, but is there another taxing district within this area for that?
In the same way that all districts get property tax.
For their facilities and so forth. Have they ever gone for a bond?
North Clackamas has gone for a bond.
For Sabin?
No, not for Sabin, but for facilities. We have used bond money to expand Sabin.
So has Sabin ever gone for a bond themselves? Or are they their own district?
They're not their own district. They're part of the North Clackamas group.
Thank you.
Okay. Members, what I'd like to do, we don't have a quorum here now. I would like to close the work session, and we are meeting tomorrow at 1:30, and out of a courtesy to Senators Vern Duncan and Rick Metzger, why we'll take this up again tomorrow. But I am not prepared to accept a motion to do anything with it until hear from the two senators tomorrow. Is that okay with everybody?
Mr. Chair, it just seems to me kind of inconvenient to have these people all who are interested come back and come back and come back. Where are the senators? Can't they come now?
They are planning.
Excuse me. They are
planning on being here.
Who did you ask for, Senator?
The two senators who are going to come tomorrow.
Yeah, they're in front of other. I still would like to just hold off on any action at all and carry this over until tomorrow. Is there any objection? Seeing none. we'll close the work session on 5052 and open up the public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 101A and 102A. And Senator Nelson was here earlier, and so who's in charge?
Yeah.
We don't have a sign-up list. Oh, do we? Oh, we do have a sign-up list, so but go ahead, Matt. Okay, you have in front of you a sheet on Senate Bill 101 and 102. Here's the reason they did it.
It needs you to stay.
The fact that he can't get here, he doesn't know what to do with it yet. But, you know, I've talked to all the committee members. We're not going to change it. Okay, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Okay. For the record, I'm Diane Vines, Vice Chancellor for Corporate and Public Affairs for the Oregon University System. And with me is Phil Scott and some other people who would like to come forward after we finish. Let me talk about these as a group of technology transfer infrastructure bills. And we're just going to do a very quick presentation about why we believe this is important, these two bills. If you look on your handout we gave you, actually, in a knowledge-based economy, which of course we are in, new growth is really related to ideas, and economies really don't grow from just capital and more labor, but economies grow from ideas and the ability to do things, change the way we do things. We're hoping that we can do that with these two bills and as a package with the other three bills that have been considered. If you look on slide five, we've tried to explain sort of what technology transfer in our sense, in this context, means. If we have basic research at Oregon universities, generally federally funded. That's the usual way. Then the funding from the Technology Transfer Fund, which is 101, SB 101, those monies would go to campuses and to faculty and would help them look at those their research and find out if there are any ideas in that research that's commercializable that could actually benefit the Oregon economy. Then, of course, you have to protect that. You need intellectual property protection, patent rights. You need to also do a prototype beta testing on that to really be sure that you have to prove the concept to be sure that it really has commercial viability. That would all be done with the Technology Transfer Fund. Then the next is you need to create a business or develop a business around that idea. And we would be proposing to work with the Oregon Resource and Technology Development Account to do that business creation and business development. And that funding is not here. We're not talking about that at this moment. Then venture capital comes in to take that idea even further, and you then create jobs and new companies. And that feeds back into the Oregon economy and to the basic research. In Oregon, compared to other states, and slide six gives you some information about this, as individual researchers, our research faculty are very competitive in their productivity and their ability to innovate. But if you go and look, and that's judged by the amount of research funding that they bring in, the amount of invention disclosures, things they come up with, and the number of patents per $100 million of research. If you look on the next slide, the problem is that licensing, which we've had only the ability to take licenses in the past, is while we've done a fair amount of it and we're pretty competitive, licenses are not very remunerative, and so that is not the best way for the state or the campuses to get a return on that investment. And the revenue per license in our case has been low. And one of the reasons for that is that in our case in Oregon, most of those licenses have been granted to companies outside of the state because they need to be large companies to utilize the license process. and we rely on small companies and emerging growth companies in the state. So even if they did get commercialized, they got commercialized outside of the state, which meant that there wasn't any benefit back to the economy. So this is an attempt to try to correct that, get more of these ideas commercialized in Oregon. Our universities in Oregon have historically filed patents only on one out of every three or four discoveries. That's not good, obviously. We don't have the money to protect those ideas, and therefore they're either going back into the public domain or they're being commercialized by other people. We also have very few Adrian Roberts called GUIs, which is the government university industry partnerships in technology transfer, and that's because we really haven't had the incentives to do this. In fact, we rank 42nd out of all the states in GUI relationships in technology. In our neighboring states, Washington Technology Center and the University of Washington's Technology Office, they get a combined budget of annually of $6 million. Utah gives about $2 million annually to the university for tech transfer activities. These ideas were generated by a group of private sector people and education leaders called the Economic Development Joint Boards Working Group. And just to refresh your memory, the SB 273 creates a council for knowledge and economic development that would sort of continue to encourage these kinds of links between higher education and economic development. That is passed and is going to the governor. H.R. 3968, which you're not looking at today, relates to the Oregon Resource and Technology Development account that I mentioned earlier, would work with us to commercialize these ideas. And then SJR 17 was the constitutional amendment that will be referred to the voters in May of 2002 for their approval so that universities could hold stock and not just do licensing. Public universities and colleges could hold stock. The technology transfer account, which is SB 102, we see this as really an alternative model for equity until the constitutional amendment passes. And unfortunately, in the bill that you have in front of you, you don't have on the last page of that bill. It should say that if the voters approve the constitutional amendment, this in the primary election of 2002, May of 2002, this account would sunset because we feel that if the campuses could hold their stock directly, it would be a better way. But in the meantime, this is legal under the Education Endowment Fund. It's constitutionally accepted already, and this would allow campuses to commercialize their technologies working with the higher education technology transfer account. Then if you go on to the slide 15, that just describes the process that will be used for the technology transfer account. That account will actually hold the equity on behalf of the campuses, but they would have an opportunity to advise the account on what was happened to those equities. SB 101 actually creates the Higher Education Technology Transfer Fund, and this actually provides dedicated funds and consistent funding to technology transfer activities. So that real early stage stuff is called the Valley of Death, and there's no money for it, and no investors want to put anything in it because it hasn't been proven that this idea is worth anything yet. So in order to do that, to protect it and then prove that it has some value, you need to have some funding in order to do that, and this explains how that would happen. We also sort of give you on slide 17 just some examples of technology transfer activities. Much of it is protecting that intellectual property and then proving that it's worth something and fixing it so that it is truly commercializable. If you look at slide 18, we have the schematic that explains sort of where this fund would sit. It would have very close working relationships with the Oregon Council for Knowledge and Economic Development, and it would have an annual report. The Oregon Council for Knowledge and Economic Development would annually report to the legislature and the governor and to the boards how this tech transfer fund is performing. Then the next page gives you some more information about the fund board and how they would work with the council. And then the commercialization process on slide 20 just walks you through that same business creation and money back to the economy that I mentioned before. I think before I go into the amendments, Senator Hartung, I don't know whether you'd like me to hold on those until after other people have talked, or would you like me just to introduce those right now?
Question.
Yes, Representative Smith.
Explain a little bit further to me, and I apologize in advance because I was still reeling from the last bill we were on. I was trying to get concentrated on here.
All right.
One of the problems you said with patents developed in Oregon, and they go out of state because the larger companies are out of state who then can afford to develop. We still don't have large companies in Oregon.
Right.
Elaborate on that.
Okay, sure. And that's related, I'm sorry, Representative Smith. That's related to that issue of whether you can take a license or you can take equity. A small company or a startup company doesn't have the cash that's required
right.
to get a license.
Okay.
And take advantage of a license. However, if the constitutional amendment passes or with the account, they would have the opportunity to take equity, and therefore they could work with small startup companies who are housed in Oregon.
Could they take equity in a larger company outside?
They could if that was
Which
their choice.
May be more profitable initially, but maybe not for long term.
Right. Exactly.
I understand. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Diane, I think let's get. We'll come back to the amendments
okay.
after Bill and others have had a chance to
Thank
talk.
You.
Bill, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bill Scott. I'm the director of the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. We have been part of the preparation of these bills, and our commission has jointly with the Board of Higher Education really formed the group that that developed this package. As you know, the state of Oregon for a long time, going back into the 1980s, has had as enshrined in policy in many ways the fact that the most important investments that we can possibly make in economic development are not necessarily those that come through our department, but that those that are made in education. However, just making investment in the same old way of doing education isn't necessarily deliver the economic results that you're looking for. And I'm very excited, and my commission is very excited. In the last few years, the Board of Higher Education and the Oregon University system has begun to bring into very sharp focus the connections between higher education and the economy in Oregon, and that's what led to the development of this package of bills. And I think that the development of those connections requires some new institutions that we haven't had before, and the ones that would be created with these two bills are absolutely critical to that mix. So we are, I think, extremely supportive of these vehicles being created. And I guess I would also say that the genius of 101 and the, now I'm confused if I've got the right one, but the one that creates the fund, the technology transfer fund, I think what Vice Chancellor Vines has managed to do is get the agreement of all the different players in higher education on a model for deciding how the money gets to, gets shared among the group, so that we actually have for the first time since I've paid any attention to it, I think a politically viable way to create a vehicle like this. And in a lot of ways, I think that's more important than the, I think we will be able to attract funding to it if we get the vehicle created. And I think that's a very important thing to do. So I urge your support of the bill.
All right, questions? No, thank you very much. So let's have group two up here. That would be Don Kramer and whoever else you want to bring up, please. I see, Don, while I think about what you're going to tell us, is it affected in any way by the amendments that we haven't considered yet? That are, go ahead and identify yourself and proceed.
Senator Hartung, my name is Don Kramer. I'm a partner with Black Heller Land Portland. I also serve as counsel to the Oregon Resource and Technology Development account. We're here today to testify in support of the bill. I'm here with Kate Richardson, who is Chief of Staff with the Treasurer's Office, and Jim Johnson, who's with Intel, and also one of the co-chairs of the New Economy Coalition. As some of you may remember, I was real involved last December in doing a New Economy Coalition workshop up in Portland, and literally, this is one of the key bills in that legislation, and I come here today because literally we want to accomplish two things. Is one, we need to get these bills passed out of committee. We need 3968 passed out of committee, whether it comes here or somewhere else. But then we also need to sort of potentially find some dollars to fund this, and I bring this up today because I know the tightness of where you are in terms of your budget negotiations and whatnot, and particularly Jim and I and others from the New Economy Coalition have been down here over the past couple of weeks trying to move this forward. Literally, I think these bills and the three others that Diane mentioned really can represent a watershed, a legacy for this session of the Oregon Legislature. I've been working on these issues for over 20 years, and I think this is the first session that I really have felt a connection between economic development and higher ed. We can talk about that, or as you remember from the New Economy Summit, Debbie Coleman, who's a venture capitalist up there, said, we got to quit studying this. We got to do something. And literally, by making an investment with ORTDA in terms of the kind of stuff with the Tier 1 engineering stuff and the full funding for the engineering, as we sort of have talked about, plus a small amount of money for 101 to really get that started, I think literally you have a structure in place with some dollars that will be levered with private sector dollars and private sector time, really to sort of help create a change process in terms of how our university system functions, as well as tying into, as we examine how we want to do economic development in the state, sort of looking forward. The one thing that I just want to briefly talk about is last week I sent to every member of the legislature a report that was published by University of Washington, and I think previously had circulated a letter by Al Quarum, who is Vice Provost of Research up there. The chair of my board, John Castle, who also serves as the chair of Murdoch Trust, is very familiar with University of Washington, what they're doing. The one statistic that is amazing to me is in the life of University of Washington, there's been 150 startup companies sort of created. In the last 10 years, there's been approximately 100 companies. If you take the entire Oregon university system, we've created about a third of that amount. Now, I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I think we've got many success stories here in terms of economic development. In fact, one of the examples of that is this guy sitting next to me. He wouldn't be here if we hadn't recruited Intel in the early 80s. But the question is times are changing here, and I think literally if we're going to be on the train to sort of capitalize on some of the benefits of the knowledge economy and build on the strengths that we need to build on and actually create tax revenues for you guys to make it easier in future years, we need to sort of look at making these investments. So I would encourage your support and endorsement of this. And with that, maybe Jim, I'll turn it over to you, and then we'll go with Kate.
I'll just make my comments very brief. And actually, I'll quote a phrase here at the end of this report, which, again, if you haven't had time to look at it, I really encourage you to do so. It's a great example of what can happen when a university drives for excellence and then in turn puts energy in creating economic value for the region. but the says here, startup companies do not arise from spontaneous combustion in university research labs and libraries. In addition to the creation, the creative work of faculty, staff, and students, the talents of hundreds of professionals, venture capital, angel investors, patent entrepreneurs, and business expertise are needed. So that there needs to be an entire environment or ecosystem to make all this stuff happen. What Senate Bill 101 and 102 is begins to help create that environment and help encourage that technology transfer out of our university systems into our economy and creating new jobs. One other thing I'd like to point out, and again, maybe this is coincidence, maybe it's not, but the average high-tech wage of a worker in the state of Washington is $128,000 a year, which is almost three times the average wage of a person in Washington. So, again, I think you can see that investing in university systems does create high value in the economy. It creates high value jobs, premium jobs, and I think that's something that we can do here in Oregon.
Thank you, Jim.
For the record, Kate Richardson, Chief of Staff, Oregon State Treasury, and I'm here on behalf of the Treasurer Randall Edwards just to give a general endorsement of this legislation. He's been testifying in support of it as it has gone through the legislature so far, and we are here today to just generally endorse the concept. We have been particularly involved with the Oregon Growth Account, as you probably know, and look forward to seeing a merger that's coming about with House Bill 3968, which you may see here before you, with the ORTDA and the Oregon Growth Account. Our only comment on the bills here before you is that we had some concern with the nature of the specific financing, but that all of the declared earnings would be going toward this. However, since there have been no declared earnings to date and it's not anticipated immediately, that's something we will be happy to work with as this gets developed over the next 2 years. So if there are any specific problems with that, we can address those over the interim, and we do endorse this.
Senator Hartung, I would just like to make, for the record, State Treasurer Randall Edwards has shown a lot of leadership here, and literally it was your leadership, Senator Hartung, and then State Representative Randall Edwards actually gave us a growth account in the first place. So I think literally this is a good continuation of sort of where we're headed. So.
Thank you. Questions for the panel? Not? Don, do you have other people that you would like to testify? Okay. Gentlemen, welcome to the committees. Identify yourself and proceed in any order you want.
Well, thank you, Senator Hartung and committee members. My name is William Newman, and I'm the interim fund manager, along with Gordon Hoffman here, for the Oregon Resource and Technology Development Account, the ORTDA, and we would like to express our strong support for these technology transfer infrastructure bills. ORTDA's emphasis is going to be on commercializing the inventions and discoveries that come out of the state's universities and research institutions for the economic benefit of the state. And having those technologies that are invented in the universities well prepared for commercialization is very important for ORTDA in its later role in creating companies. Those technologies have to be protected by patents, and the technologies have to be validated in a pre-commercial sense in order for ORTDA to feel comfortable in creating a company to launch those technologies into the commercial sector and create jobs in Oregon. The impact of university inventions can be quite dramatic on the state's economy. It's estimated that upwards of one-third of all high-tech employment in the Bay Area can trace its routes to Stanford's technologies. So those are impressive results. On the downside, if you don't protect the ideas and the technologies that are created here in this state by the state's researchers, you can have a case where the state is simply unable to benefit. And I give you one example. Bruce Gold is a researcher at Oregon Health Sciences University, OHSU. He discovered a very powerful therapeutic use for a drug in repairing nerve damage, useful in Parkinson's and spine cord injured patients and the like. OHSU did not have the resources to patent this technology. Their technology transfer offices were underfunded. Consequently, when Bruce spoke about this research at a conference, a very astute scientist in New York understood the significance of that discovery and went out and founded a company based on that discovery. That company today, Guilford Pharmaceuticals, is worth over $600 million. I did a quick calculation using data on the internet this morning, and I found that that value is greater than the combined value of all publicly traded biotech companies in Oregon. So that particular discovery, discovered at an Oregon university by an Oregon researcher, is not yielding benefits for Oregon because the resources were not there to do so. And for that reason, I very strongly urge you to support this suite of legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Questions? Comments? Gordon?
Well, thank you, Mr. Senator Hartung and members of the committee. I just wanted to elaborate somewhat on what Bill said. I'm also a fund co-manager of ORTDA and also the director of technology commercialization at OGI. I'll be phasing that position out. And OGI is a small institution in the state. It has produced some notable spin-outs like FEI up there, but that was some years ago. I wanted to remind you that the Bayh-Dole Act that the federal government put forth back in 1980 gave the rights for universities to pick up the intellectual property created by federal research. And it's, in a way, it's an opportunity for all the universities. It was intended to be a benefit. And many universities have taken advantage of that. We've heard about University of Washington that's now has over $500 million a year in federal research and has spun out companies with a total market cap of $7 billion. And that figure is almost 2 years old, so it may be well higher than that. And it's a shame not to take advantage of it. For instance, at OGI, I've served for the last 2 years really as a volunteer because there has been really no money for commercialization at all. And even in our own portfolio, a couple of the companies, the technology that started those companies, like AVI Biopharma, was actually came from the university but was given to the professors because they couldn't afford the patents. So this is a shame for those people who have taken advantage of it. One notable example is not necessarily a university you think of as a research powerhouse, but Florida State University. I don't know how many of you have heard of it, but they took the drug Taxol, which was discovered in yew trees up here in the Northwest, and synthesized it, and in the last fiscal year had over $55 million worth of royalties just from that one invention. And that's just at FSU. And what the state has done is they've gone ahead and funded a $110 million bio center in Tampa with guaranteed annual funding and continue to put money into it. They've seen the value, and they're really behind it, as have other states, Michigan, obviously the Carolinas, even recently Wisconsin. So the opportunity is here. In a way, it's a gift for the federal research, which is most of the research in our universities. And we should certainly take advantage of it. So I'm a strong proponent of these bills.
Thank you. Questions for these gentlemen? No, thank you very much. Don, you have any more on your crew that we should hear from? Okay, thank you. So, Diane, let's consider the amendments you have.
Okay. On the back of that handout, you have the Legislative Council's suggested amendments. You'll notice that we've added in section 5-8 that I'm sorry, section 6-8 is that they would report annually to do an annual report to the Oregon Council for Knowledge and Economic Development on the goals, activities, and operations of the board and the performance of the fund. In addition, in section 6-B, it's just that it will become operative January 2nd, 2006. These amendments, and then adding under section 5 of section 14.5.1, adding the Higher Ed Tech Transfer Fund Board as a group that the Oregon Council for Knowledge and Economic Development would advise. So that is from another bill, and I think those are the ones on this piece, this legislation. We have two conceptual amendments that we wanted also for you to consider today. One is on the Technology Transfer Fund, Senate Bill 101, and in working with the Treasurer's Office, it isn't clear enough on the earnings that would hopefully long-term help to fund the account, the fund, rather. And so on Section 11 and 12 of of 101, SB 101, we are asking that there be a conceptual amendment that would actually say all declared earnings. It simply clarifies that we felt this was implied, but the Treasurer would feel more comfortable, and we understand completely and agree that adding the word declared, so it's in Section 11.
Just a minute. Hang on.
Yeah, okay, sorry. Section 11 and 12.
Aren't as good as
excuse me, Diane.
Yes.
What are you working off of?
I'm sorry.
Engrossed?
The engrossed. Uh-huh.
The
right. Engrossed 101.
A engrossed 101.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you want conceptual amendments?
Section 11 and 12.
Excuse me, you want some conceptual amendments?
Yes.
We don't like conceptual amendments. Are these necessary?
Yes. Now, the reason we worked this out this morning with the Treasurer is the only reason you don't have it in front of you. Their Ledge Council has it, and they're working on it.
Okay.
So depending on how, but all it does is add a word. It's declared earnings rather than just earnings in each of these spots.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and we thought that was implied because obviously you don't have earnings until they're declared, but the Treasurer would be more comfortable, and that's fine with us because it is our intention for those to be declared earnings rather than earnings, all earnings, because it's once they declare them that they become earnings. So it is, I believe, conceptual. So we would like it if you would consider that. One other conceptual amendment that they will simply, Ledge Council will be adding is on SB 102 on the section. If you look on A engrossed 102.
Just a minute.
I'm sorry, sure.
I switched files.
Okay, sorry.
SB 102.
Yes.
Engrossed.
Section 8 and 18 and 19.
Just a minute.
Now, Diane, next time you come before us,
yes.
Have something printed. This
yes,
is
sir.
Not good to have.
I'm
try
sorry.
To do this. But
okay.
we can work our way through it.
Okay.
Okay.
The Senate Joint Resolution SJR 17 is actually going to come to the next primary election, not the next regular election. So we just wanted to inform you of that. That was just not should have been changed officially on your A engrossed, but wasn't. So it's for your information. Well. I think that the Ledge Council said that we didn't actually have to. They can adopt that on that one. You want to amend it? Okay. All right. Okay. So we would like that. Those are our requests.
Sure. Steve, do you understand what the request is?
Yes, I do understand the two requests. The requests for the conceptual amendments on Senate Bill 102 are necessary, and on the sheet that I distributed, I listed them as the last bullet item. I request that you approve those amendments.
Oh, thank you. Okay, I'm sorry.
I did have a question about the amendment request to Senate Bill 101. Is that
yes,
right?
Certainly.
I mean, it sounds fine, but I was wondering if the Treasurer had, when they said that they wanted, they had 2 years to implement this, is the Treasurer okay with this? It was unclear to me.
We'll let the Treasurer speak for himself here.
Kate Richardson, Oregon State Treasurer. Would you repeat your question? You wanted to know if...
I was just wondering if the Treasury had an opinion on this requested amendment, because you did say something about having 2 years before there would be any declared earnings.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Council, there's no anticipated declared earnings, and we don't want to slow this bill down. I think Legislative Council thought that's something that could come in since it was to be just declared. Our concern is this, that it would be that all earnings would be, that all declared earnings would be express statement. If the legislative history will serve, we can let that go at this point. And because we don't anticipate any declared earnings in the next 2 years, that's something we could also address. So if you would rather not take the conceptual amendments, we can let that go. It was just legislative council suggested that it would be done here. Either way, we can let the legislative history stand to serve that purpose as well. Okay.
Great. Questions of the members? Steve has a sheet here on 101 and 102, and he says there's nothing that we have heard from testimony that conflicts with his understanding of what the bill says. And so I would like a motion to amend Senate Bill 101 with the dash three amendments.
Chair, before we go there, you
yes.
asked for questions, but then didn't look my direction, and I had one.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Questions first.
With regard to the financing of this, Mr. Bender's for 101A says the bill allocates earnings from the Oregon Growth Account and the Oregon Resource Technology Development Account to the fund. What is happening currently with the earnings? Are there earnings already, and what's happening to them?
There are no declared earnings at this time from Oregon Growth Account or a TDA.
I see. So these are going to be new earnings, and they're going to be dedicated to this, and they've not been used for anything else. Okay, that's good. Thanks.
Let's see, Diane, I understand. There is money in the Oregon Growth Account, but they have not declared any earnings.
That is correct.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
So the question is, how much is in the account?
How much is in the account?
How much is in there now?
In the account, I think that they have, what, $14 million in Oregon Growth Account that's to be invested. About $14 million. Steve, do you have the, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Steve?
I don't have, I'm sorry, I don't either have the number of the corpus of the amount of money in the account. I know, though, that this is an account that continuously receives funds from the lottery. Of the 15% of the lottery that's dedicated to the Education Endowment Fund, 10% of that goes into the Oregon Growth Account. So that's about 1.5% of lottery earnings are continuously going. So this should continue to, you know, build unless the investments lose value.
So and you are all saying that money has not been used for anything else. The earnings on that money.
There have been no the Oregon Growth Account makes investments with those funds that are generally of a nature that they do not bring about any return immediately.
Yes.
To date, there have been no declared earnings.
Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me just one moment. Senator Trove, if you had your questions, the reason I asked there's a call of the House, you're going to lose our members.
Okay.
Would you object to amending this bill?
Aren't they excused?
It's there's a call. We're not excused for a call.
No.
Mr. Chair, that's fine.
Right.
Go ahead.
Okay. Is there any objection to adopting the amendments, Senate Bill 101, that would be the Dice 3 Amendment, seeing no objection, so ordered, and the conceptual amendments, we understand what those are, do we, Steve? Any objection to the conceptual amendments? Seeing none? Okay, and actually, go to your call house, I think we can adjourn, Kim. Is there anything we can't put up till tomorrow?
Are you going to move both 101 and 102?
Yes, as amended to the floor.
We need to do that.
Let's do that. You made the motion.
I so move.
On Senate Bill 101, to the full with the due pass.
And I move 102.
To the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Okay. Thank you, members. That's all we can do.
Okay.
Was there no other business?
My questions.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
We can pick those up tomorrow if we need to. We are adjourned.